It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 71 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. Now, I wanted to take this episode to talk about some skills that I've been developing lately as an X-Wing player.
Yeah, as of late, our focus has been a lot on the preview articles coming out about Wave 11 ships and newly announced Guns for Hire expansion, but it would be good, I think, to take a step back and focus in on some of the basics of X-Wing.
Yeah, so if you've been following us, I've been doing better than I usually do. And part of that is I think I've leveled up my maneuvering game. Often, this is a common practice I do, where win or lose a game, I check in and look at what won me the game, what costed me the game. And I found win or lose, vastly it's been in the maneuvering aspect of the game. Of course, identifying that is the first step.
Yeah, it's no secret that X-Wing is, at its base, a maneuvering and spatial reasoning game. I would argue that that's almost the most fundamental aspect of the game. Sure, we've got dice and upgrade cards, but at the end of the day, if you don't know how to place your ships and where to place your ships, you're probably not going to perform that well.
Yeah, and so this is something I've definitely been improving on, and definitely still a lot more I can improve on. A lot of this I've learned from actually watching Tim fly.
All my mistakes.
So I think we both have pretty good insights into this. So this week we're going to focus in on one of the key aspects of the game, maneuvering. So I wanted to start off with a quote from one of my favorite fantasy novels, The Wise Man's Fear, by Patrick Rothfuss. Here a man is explaining to the main character why he plays a game called TAC, which is pretty similar to like chess, which we know is pretty similar to X-Wing. So he explains to our main character, any man that's half awake can spot a trap that's laid for him. But to stride in boldly with a plan to turn it on its ear, that is a marvelous thing. To set a trap and know someone will come in wary, ready with a trick of their own, and then beat them, that is twice marvelous.
That is actually a really great quote, and I think very apt when we're discussing quite possibly the most important aspect of X-Wing, which is maneuvering.
Right. When we look at how an X-Wing game plays out, you set up your opening engagement and maneuver towards your opponent, all with the goal to set up that optimal engagement, which is really a trap for your opponent, but they're trying to set a trap for you, and you're both trying to avoid your opponent's trap while guiding them into your own. And so really, it all speaks to the dynamics of the two players playing against each other, trying to really leverage the maneuvering aspect of the X-Wing game.
Well, and one of the reasons I say it's quite possibly the most fundamental aspect of the game is because it affects every area of the game. We can talk about ship stat lines and dice and upgrade efficiency, but those generally are circumstantial. You're not always firing. You're not always triggering every upgrade, whereas every single round, the maneuver you choose affects every other decision that you're going to make in the remainder of that round.
Games in general are won by the decisions you make, and often the decisions you make in X-Wing are vastly maneuvering decisions. That's your chance to outplay your opponent. Yeah, you can do some things in list building to give yourself an advantage, but once you get to the table, it's really in the planning phase of the game and your repositioning actions you use that give you your best opportunity to outplay your opponent.
Well, and I think the first thing we want to talk about when we're talking about maneuvering is setting up the fight. We're going to overlap a little bit with what we've talked about in one of our previous episodes, episode 52, X-Wing Fundamentals, the three phases of X-Wing, where we made the comparisons between X-Wing and chess and talked about the main phases of the game and what you're trying to accomplish there. So obviously, setting up your first engagement is of paramount importance in determining how likely you are to win that game.
From there, you're looking to create that advantage that you're going to use to snowball through the rest of the game.
And the first thing to consider when you're considering maneuvers is actually something that happens before any ships even hit the board. Right after you determine who has initiative, you go to rock placement.
Yeah, so this skill is kind of harder to track on how you are in improving with it because it happens so early in the game that it's kind of hard to think about it by the time the game's over. What I usually do is after my game ended, especially if I lost, I look at okay, where did that first engagement take place? And where did I want it to take place? And hopefully those are the same thing. Often when I've lost, I've found that those have been different. And that's part of why I wanted to take this episode, is I've kind of found this to be more important than I initially thought it was.
Well, and when trying to determine where that first engagement is going to take place, obviously you first have to decide where you want it to take place. And rocks are going to play a big part into determining what lanes and what space is available to play with and how you're going to kind of guide your ships and your opponent's ships into that ideal first engagement.
Right. So as an example, I've been flying a Shadowcaster a lot recently, where that ship wants asteroids involved because it really wants them to control their opponent's maneuvering. But it needs open lanes to maneuver because it wants to be using those speed 3 maneuvers. So it needs a lot of room to maneuver, but still keep rocks in place. So I need to create kind of circular lanes or kind of a clustered middle with not much going around on the outsides of my rocks.
Well, and this is an interesting point, too, because here rocks are very important, not just the skill of the player flying the ship, because you might be able to perfectly measure out how your different maneuvers are going to look on the board, but if the rocks are placed in such a way that none of your maneuvers are a good option, well, that's going to be an ongoing problem, and that doesn't have really anything to do with your ability to fly the ship.
Yeah, and I found in games I've lost, my Shadowcaster is in a position where I'm looking, I'm like, okay, I want to turn this way, but there's a rock there. And then my next best turn is also blocked by a rock. And I'm like, how did I get myself in this position? And I'm like, oh yeah, this is really not where I thought I would be fighting. Somehow my opponent got me to play here.
And I think that's an interesting part of it too, is obviously this isn't a one-player affair. Both players are going to be trying to make these same decisions in trying to set up the first engagement so it benefits them. To that end, I think a key point in rock placement and during the setup phase is trying to place your rocks in such a way to either create lanes that are appropriate for your ship and that your ships can use effectively, or if your opponent needs certain open lanes, trying to place rocks in such a way that you block your opponent's lanes. So for instance, Carson, if I was flying against you, as we often have, and you're flying Asajj, which is that large base Lancer-class pursuit craft, it's got a pretty good dial. You've got a lot of three-speed maneuvers that you prefer to use because they're green. So when I see you placing rocks there, I'm going to try and position my rocks in such a way to make it as hard as possible for your ship to clear those three banks in three turns.
Yeah, you really want to create like a really tight rock placement. And then if you do so, like I'm kind of locked to maneuvering around the full outside, and you can use that knowledge to your advantage. Because then if I am turning into commit, I'm going through a dense asteroid field that will be very problematic for me.
Another thing you'll want to consider, though, is you might want to focus in on creating appropriate lanes for your ships. Sometimes it doesn't matter. If you're flying a lot of small base, highly maneuverable ships, they are generally very good at maneuvering through tight clusters of asteroids, which might be your preferable placement then to just have those asteroids clustered so that they hurt your opponent and that you can benefit from them. But if you're flying a ship with a much more limited range, especially in terms of the turns it has, like a TIE SF, which only has the white two turn, its other turns are red maneuvers, you're going to have to consider more carefully how you're going to be able to move around these asteroids several turns ahead.
Yeah, it's a bit easier if you're playing ships with like defenders with the K turns where you just want a straight line clear and that's where you want to engage. It gets a bit more trickier if you're playing ships like the TIE SF or aggressors that have those sloops, and where when you're picking your engagement space, you want to leave the sides a bit more open so you'll have room for those S loops. So then after you've created your zone, whether it's, you know, on your opponent's side or your side, you've identified a spot of the terrain that you think is going to be advantageous for you. Now you have to figure out, okay, how do I get it so that we play here?
Well, and there's two points I think we should bring up when we're talking about this. Two things you generally need to consider or possibly avoid when you've set up your zone where you want the first engagement to and you're trying to draw your opponent in there. The first point I would bring up, and this is a mistake often made by new players, is you generally want to avoid jousting with your opponent. And when we say joust, we're talking about all of my ships fly straight at all of his ships, and we just roll it out and see who's more efficient and has better variance.
Yeah, and it's weird. So I've stopped jousting with all of my lists. Even if I have a better jousting efficiency. And 7 or 8 times out of 10, if we both fly at each other and roll dice, I'll come out on top. I've stopped going for the joust unless my opponent gives me no other option.
Well, yeah, the fundamental problem with jousting is that you are depending on variance. So even if on average your list is a little bit better, it's more likely to put out damage and less likely to take damage when you're going head to head. Variance is a key part of the game, and the best players are the ones who can work within the confines of variance and try to eliminate opportunities where the variance can swing the game, particularly swing the game against your favor.
Right. And so if you commit to jousting, you're giving up on a lot of the options and decisions you can make to outplay your opponent. You're saying, I'm going to let this be in the dice's hands on how this game is going to play out. And yeah, in the joust, you can still control speed and set up that ideal first engagement. But often when you go for the joust, you also have limited maneuver options after that. So if you move at your opponent, say you fire some torpedoes or you get a range one shot with your Fang Fighter, now that next turn, you might be in a disadvantaged position and have limited options to move forward with that. You might be locked into needing to dial up a K turn, or perhaps you don't want to go to a range one engagement, but now you don't really have any choice in how to avoid that. Whereas if you stagger your approach and approach from multiple angles, well, now your ships have more options in how they follow through.
You mentioned angles there, and I want to bring something up that we don't always think about when we're setting up. I often catch myself making this mistake where when you're setting up on your side of the board, there's actually a big decision you make when you choose the angle your ship is at. Oftentimes, we're prone to, or at least I'm prone to, setting my ship up at 90-degree angles, so either facing straight across the board or facing to the left or right along my edge of the board. And there's actually a lot of benefit to slightly tilting the angle of your ship, depending on the ship you're flying. So when I'm flying an ace ship like the TIE Advanced prototype with the Inquisitor, oftentimes I will rotate that ship, not fully at a diagonal angle, but give it a slight turn on the angle.
Yeah, you're looking somewhere between like 5 and 15 degrees.
Well, and what this does is really two main things come to mind. It makes your ship that much harder to predict and block. That slight angle there suddenly makes all your two turns end you up in a slightly different place and gives you a lot more versatility there in how you can position and how you can avoid being blocked. The other really important thing it does, especially for ace ships like Fenrau and the Protectorate or the Inquisitor, is it slightly angles your firing arc. And the reason this is important is, let's say you have two ships that are oriented at 90 degrees. So I set up my Fenrau facing straight across to the opposite side of the board, and my opponent did the same thing with his Inquisitor. All right, so now typically any time when we're kind of facing the same direction, we're always going to have each other in arc. So even if we get up close, if I've got him just in the edge of my arc, he's got me just in the edge of his arc. What you get by slightly tilting that 5 to 15 degrees is that suddenly you can set up opportunities where if I barrel roll, I might be able to catch my opponent in my arc, but since I'm swung out a little bit, his arc might not be able to catch me. And it's always true, whenever you can shoot at your opponent and deny them a return shot, that's almost always the best course.
Right, that's the goal, that's what you want to work towards. One thing to definitely keep in mind when trying this technique out is, what side do you think you're going to be approaching on? Because you can definitely twist yourself the wrong direction and have it where even you barrel roll and they still have arc on you, but you don't have arc on them now. It can definitely work against you, but I found that creating that opportunity by just adjusting it a hair, because the maneuver system is very much locked in, you have 90 degree turns and banks rotate your firing arc 45 degrees. It's very segmented that way, and giving yourself a little tweak, I've found, has created a lot of opportunities for favorable exchanges.
And again, it'll vary from ship to ship, so what might work for ace ships like the Inquisitor or Fenrau might not necessarily be the best option for your other ships. Sometimes having that linear orientation allows you to fly your ships close together more effectively without the risk of bumping into your own ships.
Yeah, I could also see this working well on like that new Ossetok gunship, or the Trandoshan Slaver, where you have the 180 firing arc, and where a slight tweak can keep you where you care just a little bit more about where they might escape your arc give you just a little bit more edge in that direction. So it's not just for the repositioners. It can work for the low pilot skills moving first as well.
So looking at the next part of setting up the fight, we've already talked about rock placement. We've talked about where you initially place your ships. Another very important factor is controlling your speed. And I think there's kind of two aspects to this. The first one ties in a lot to committing your ships. We talked about this in our X-Wing Fundamentals Three Phases of X-Wing episode, where committing ships is an important portion of the game because that moves you from phase one into phase two of the game where you're going to start making those exchanges with your opponent. So controlling speed is a huge part of that. What we mean by controlling speed is that, let's set up a very simple scenario here. I've clustered the rocks more or less on my side of the board because I think it's disadvantageous to my opponent to play in this little zone on my side of the board by these rocks. That means I'm trying to set up that first engagement near these rocks on my side of the board. Controlling speed is very important here because depending on where we set up, I want to try and move at such a rate that when we end up shooting each other, which happens in pretty much every X-Wing game, I want that to be taking place on my side of the board. Now, this could vary in difficulty depending on the ships I'm flying and what maneuvers they have available to them.
Right. Now, when you've set up your ideal terrain on your side of the board, you want to be doing a few things. You want to not be moving too quickly, and you also want to be not moving toward your opponent at all so that they have to come to you.
Yeah, and I'll often do this when I'm flying ships that benefit from engagements at range 3. So let's say I'm flying a Dash Rendar with heavy laser cannon and the Outrider title. I don't need to depend on having my opponent in my firing arc to shoot, so I can actually set up my dash, and I would often do this when I'm flying dash, where he's facing perpendicular. So he's facing to the right or to the left, depending on where my opponent sets up, and he can kind of take these slow maneuvers, one forwards, two forwards, combined with a barrel roll, and try to pull my opponent in. The goal here being, I want that first engagement to take place at range 3 where I can shoot one of his ships and he has as few ships as possible shooting back and they're taking the worst shots I can hopefully set up.
Right, and so the big value here is waiting to see what your opponent does. So if they go full forward towards your ship, that allows that ship to then probably run away and gives you time for your other ship to be flanking around. So your goal with any engagement is to have all of your ships converge within the same turn. When you're taking a few turns to set up that engagement, speed can be very important, where often you'll find yourself in a scenario where you just want to do that one forward to avoid the engagement for another turn, hopefully stay out of range 3, and then so the next turn, you're ready to engage with your other ships.
Yeah, I think it's really important here. As a general rule, you want your ships to converge on the same turn, or depending on your list, maybe within one round of each other. So what I mean by that is oftentimes what I'll do nowadays when I'm playing X-Wing is I kind of quickly visualize. You don't have to be that precise about how you mentally measure your maneuvers, but I kind of visualize, okay, I've got ships approaching from different angles, looking at, okay, am I going to approach my opponent based on where I think they're going to go? Am I going to hit them on the next turn, the turn after that, or the third turn? And then I'll set my maneuvers accordingly so that all my ships can be converging at the same time. You don't want to be caught in a scenario where one of your ships is engaging your opponent's ships so that you've got one shot at his ships and they've got multiple shots coming back at you.
Right. And conversely, if you see your opponent has left one of their ships out of position and if you go 5 forward, their other ships won't be able to get there in time. Well, then that's something, you know, you might want to go for. And so that's where, okay, if they're going really slow with their ship, not going to be able to escape, then turn up the speed and try to leverage the advantage the other way.
Here's where controlling speed is really important. And it's kind of interesting when you look at X-Wing ships. A ship's ability to control speed doesn't necessarily have to do with how fast it can go. Oftentimes, we'll see ships that have what I would call high speed control, things like the Shadowcaster, where you have a dial that's very versatile. It's got one straights and one banks, but it also has things like 3 hard turns and 5 straights. This is a ship that's really effective at controlling its rate of approach so that when you do these kind of pre-measures about, okay, where do I think the fight's going to take place? How do I converge all my ships at the same time? The Shadowcaster is very good at controlling how fast it can go towards that first engagement.
Right. And you might think, okay, because it's a large base ship, even a one forward takes it pretty far. But having like a one bank, you can bank out the other direction, not towards the fight. And then because it has those really fast turns and banks, you could turn back in the other direction the next turn and be in an optimal range. It has so many different options that you can really adapt to whatever scenario you need.
Now, adversely, ships that have low speed control are oftentimes ships that are very fast. So on one end of the spectrum, you have things like Protectorate Starfighters or TIE Interceptors, which can move very quickly and have a lot of great repositioning options, but they're generally not that good at moving slowly, especially when they're paired with ships that can't move that fast. It becomes a lot more difficult to try and control your speed and range so that all your ships are converging at the same time.
Yeah, I think one of the ships that has the best speed control is the TIE Advanced Prototype, where it has those repositioning actions, but also has a lot more slow maneuvers. So you can do the one bank and barrel roll backwards to avoid range for another turn, but then still also has those fast maneuvers plus boost to get in flanking when you need to.
Another thing to consider, and this comes up for you, Carson, because you're flying a Hawk in your current list. That's a ship with low speed control that's also not very fast, and you're pairing that up with a Fen Rao, a Protectorate, which tends to want to move pretty quickly. So you've experienced firsthand the kind of speed differentials and how you need to compensate for that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been, I think, one of the big challenges on my list, but after I've kind of solved that puzzle, I think it really paid off, where using the maneuvering from the cloaking device, I was able to mitigate that. And the Hawk is generally pretty slow, but the turn where you decloak towards your opponent and then do a two turn or three straight in their direction, whether or not you're moving laterally or forward there, can keep it where it's engaging just as fast as a Shadowcaster or a Protectorate. And I think that can really catch opponents off guard, where it looks like I'm slow rolling, and because I have been for two turns, then kind of on a dime, I can move from well outside of range three to in a solid engagement where I'm at least within range two of Polyb's ability to trigger.
Well, and the speed control of a ship, whether it's a high-speed control ship like the Shadowcaster or low-speed control like the Protectorate, also affects how it does when it gets into the scrum of the fight, which we'll actually talk about here in just a couple minutes.
Yeah, and these are all things to keep in mind. I mean, because you're playing against an opponent who, to their credit, is probably doing some of these things right as well, it's not always going to go exactly as you hope for. And so you have to be adaptive, but these are kind of the goals you want to keep in mind and kind of check in during each planning phase. Okay, how's this going? What do I want to be achieving here? And then, of course, something to look over after the game ends. Okay, how did that opening engagement go? Could I have been a little bit slower with maybe my flanker? That would have given my other ships more time to get in. Things like that.
Hey, Radio TCX listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. There's still a few days left if you want to become a patron of Radio TCX to be eligible for our July raffle. In order to be eligible for the raffle, you need to become a patron of Radio TCX before the end of the month of June. This month, we have two different prizes to give away. The first prize is a set of Alt Art upgrade cards. These have come from a variety of different tournament kits. We've got a Predator, Push the Limit, Gunner, Recon Specialist, Veteran Instincts, and C-3PO. These are all alt art upgrade cards from different tournament kits, and they're all coming as a set, so one lucky Radio TCX patron will win all six of them. Our other prize is a pretty cool one. If you're not able to do well enough at a store championship to earn one, we are giving away an Agent Callus token. Carson has won a couple store championships at this point, so he's got an extra one of these tokens, and he was kind enough to offer it up as a raffle prize to one of our lucky patrons. So again, guys, if you want to be eligible for this raffle, you need to become a patron of Radio TCX before the end of the month of June. That just gives you a couple days left to be eligible for this raffle. You can do that by going to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a backer of the show at any level. All right, now back to the cast. So once we get finished preparing our setup, the next thing we really need to focus in on when we're talking about maneuvering is planning ahead. This may seem kind of obvious, but it's actually very integral in your decision-making process, what you think you're going to need to do in the following rounds after a given maneuver.
Right, and it's not like you hear in chess people talking, oh, I was planning more turns ahead than my opponent. It's not exactly like that. It's more about being very detailed about how you are planning ahead. It's about, you know, setting goals and making the right maneuvers to meet those goals.
Yeah, so when we talk about setting a goal, what we're talking about is how do I accomplish one of these smaller steps I need to do on my way to winning this game. So if you're planning a broad strategy whenever you face off against your opponent, you kind of have in your mind an ideal sequence of events or things that need to happen in order for you to win the game. This can vary a little bit, but generally a huge part of it is deciding what your target's going to be and how you're going to destroy that target.
So when you first meet up across the table from your opponent and they show you their list, you kind of want to close your eyes and picture an engagement where maybe you got all of your torpedoes off on their important target, or you got your ships at range one of their ace and were able to wipe it off the board, right? You have to have those goals in mind so that you can plan according and make them a reality.
Yeah, and a key part of that is what we talked about in our last X-Wing Fundamentals episode, setting up winning exchanges. So maneuvering plays into that heavily. When we talk about setting up winning exchanges, you want to make decisions where either I'm shooting and my opponent isn't shooting, or I'm shooting and my opponent's shooting me back, but I have an advantage position based on the actions I've taken and my positioning.
Right, and I found it's important to have multiple goals throughout the game. So a good goal number one is, what is the most threatening ship my opponent has? And let's remove that from the table.
But along the way, there are other considerations you might need to make. Like, sometimes you get presented with attacks of opportunity, like we were talking about in the setup. If your opponent's a little out of sequence with their approach and one of their ships is pulled away from the rest of them, so you can engage that ship without having to engage the other ships in their list immediately, sometimes that's an opportunity you want to take and say, well, I can have all my ships converge in on this one ship. Even though that's not the biggest threat, there's a huge advantage in me removing this ship before I have to deal with the rest of my opponent's list. There are also other persistent threats that you need to consider, and those could be little goals for you as well. Things I consider persistent threats that I don't necessarily want to remove from the board first are ships like Bossk. Bossk is a very powerful large base ship with a lot of hit points, so it takes a little while to bring him down, but I can try and set one of my goals being, okay, I want to put Bossk in a position where Bossk gets as few shots as possible on me. This might include moving in to bump into Bossk or cause Bossk to bump into me and then get behind Bossk, because Bossk's style has a really hard time turning around completely. This can allow you to set up your other shots to take down the bigger threats in your opponent's list and then clean up Bossk.
Yeah, so conversely, if you're playing the ship like Bossk or other, you know, early alpha damage ships where, say, you're using munitions to create an early advantage, your goals are going to be to eliminate your opponent's options to escape the threat of your munitions, as well as create the ideal range where you can get those target locks and fire your munitions without them getting, say, in range one to escape the threat of the munitions.
Well, as munitions like proton torpedo or homing missile become more and more important in the game, you need to be able to determine how to use those effectively if they're in your list, or if you're facing against them, how to deny your opponent opportunities to use them. So a best case scenario is where maybe your opponent has a proton torpedo and extra munitions, so there's two potential proton torpedoes coming at you, which can be devastating if they can slip critical damage through. To try and deny your opponent opportunities to use those, you can move in quickly and try to get into range one of his ship so that your opponent's unable to fire them. You can block to try and deny your opponent the actions and the target lock it needs to fire those munitions. And this is important because you don't necessarily want to target the ship with the munitions first, depending on what list you're flying against, but you do want to deny its efficiency in using those ordnance to lay out a bunch of early damage.
So we've set up the battlefield. We've made a series of goals for how we're going to win the game. And now we need to use that information to assist our decision making.
What's most important to keep in mind here is that the decisions you make don't just affect the turn you make the decisions in, they affect your turns going forward. So one very important thing about maneuvering an X-Wing is keeping in mind your future maneuver options.
Right. So I've often found myself in the planning phase looking at, okay, the best maneuver for this turn is perhaps a 3-bank. That will give me the best shot. I'll be at, you know, the closest range. I'll get the most value from my attack dice. But if I take a 3-bank now, my turns are going to be blocked by an asteroid. So for me to pursue and finish off my target, it's going to be better for me to dial it back, maybe take a one or two bank, and then I'll have that turn open the next turn to proceed forward.
Yeah, what you're trying to avoid here is, and this is also another beginner mistake, is where, well, if I take this maneuver, I'll have the ideal shot for this turn, maybe, you know, four or five dice at range one. But if that takes me out of the game for multiple rounds, even just being out of the game for two rounds can be devastating if your opponent's able to focus in on you. And the inherent risk you take by going for the ideal shot and risking not being active in the fight for the next couple turns is that with the way the game works and the inherent variance of die rolls and modification, that ideal attack might not even do the damage you expect it to do.
Right. When you're making your maneuvering decisions, you want to be putting pressure on your opponent. You're presenting a threat, or you're making it difficult for them to catch your threat. And if you ever are in a position where you don't have a good dial position to keep up the pressure on your opponent, and then you have to ease up, well, then you're giving your opponent a chance to get back into the game. And so you want to plan accordingly, plan a few steps ahead, so that you're never in a position where there's not the maneuver option available to you that you want.
And this part of the discussion focuses more on your decision-making process, but another common beginner mistake is not considering your opponent's decision-making process, or more specifically, what maneuvers they're likely going to perform in this round. Oftentimes, your options for what maneuvers you can perform the following round will be heavily impacted by the position your opponent's ships end up in.
So one thing to consider is not just what rocks are blocking your future maneuvers, but perhaps you know, okay, after this turn, I'm going to want to K-turn, or this might go poorly and I want to have escape routes available. If you're moving first in the pilot skill order, then you're going to have to play around your opponent's ships in where they land this turn for your future maneuvers. So that's something to keep in mind. You want to anticipate their movements and how they might impact your maneuvers the following turn.
Yeah, so I think as a general rule, two things you really want to consider is, what are my maneuver options going to be, not only the next turn, but even the turn after that? And what is my opponent going to do? You want to keep these two things in mind, because there's really no benefit to doing three damage to Darth Vader this turn if I'm not going to be able to shoot at him for three or four more turns after that.
Right, and if you're trying to track down like a fast ace like Fenrau, it might be better to create maybe a less advantageous combat the first turn and set up to track him perhaps if he goes for the K turn, where he has less ability to reposition out. And so if you wait a turn to go for the, you know, kill box maneuver, you might get more of a payoff. And so if you can think about how your opponent might likely navigate your approach, in some cases it can be better to think about how their maneuvering will play out the future turn and set up accordingly.
So the last thing we're going to consider here is something that takes place kind of in the meat of the game, the middle part, where a lot of the most important exchanges happen. We've been calling this a couple times throughout the podcast, the scrum. Carson, what is the scrum?
Now, this comes from rugby, which I've never played, but I have enough of an appreciation to understand that this perfectly describes the phase where all of your ships move into positions where they're overlapping each other. Your firing arcs are hardly moving. You're laying out the tracks and doing bumper cars.
The actual definition of scrum is an ordered formation of players used to restart play, in which the forwards of a team form up with arms interlocked and heads down and push forward against a similar group from the opposing side. The ball is thrown into the scrum and the players try to gain possession of it by kicking it back toward their own side. So, not a perfect analogy in that we don't really have a ball in X-Wing, but I think we can compare this to trying to set up a winning exchange. So, when your ships start to overlap and bump into your opponent's ships, you're going to try and position them in such a way that the following turn, you can gain an advantageous position. This will often occur after the first or second round of shooting, where you don't really have a lot of good turnaround options because you're close enough, but not close enough to land your 3, 4, and 5Ks. But at the same time, you're still trying to focus in on a target. So whatever ship you put a bunch of damage into, you're likely going to try and finish that ship off.
Right, so most players can grasp, okay, if I put this 3 bank down, I'll travel this far. My arc will lay out at this angle. But it gets a lot more complicated when you have your ships bumping into each other, your opponent's ships getting in the way. Your ship might not move. It might move, you know, just a few centimeters. And so you want to figure out, okay, how do I create favorable exchanges in this very close quarters, not much movement scenario?
And in this part of the game, blocking becomes very important. In earlier waves of X-Wing, blocking used to be a very valuable skill for putting your ships in front of opponents' ships so that they crash in and are denied actions. Because of cards like K4 Security Droid and Atani Mind Link, that's less important because ships that overlap often still receive actions like a focus from Atani or a free target lock from K4 Security Droid. But what hasn't become irrelevant is the fact that two ships that are overlapping cannot perform attacks against each other. And this is something you want to consider both on the offensive side when you're deciding which ships you want to shoot, and on the defensive side, where do I want to deny my opponent's shots?
And the other important factor is the limited ability to rotate your firing arc if you are getting blocked. And so ships that have either turrets or secondary firing arcs have a pretty good advantage in these scenarios. So if you're flying like a Shadowcaster or a TIE SF, you can really use that to your advantage. Having multiple options to shoot gives you a lot more choices in this stage of the game.
So the first thing we want to look at when the scrum has begun is the order of activation for ships. Which ships are going to move first? And you're going to have to try and imagine what kind of bumping scenario you're going to see here. Primarily, which ships are still going to have arc and which ships are going to be touching so they can't attack each other.
Right, and this becomes a lot easier if you have like a large base ship moving early where you can occupy a lot of the space. And then that kind of has cascading effects where, okay, my opponent's first ship might bump into me, and that might stop their later ships activating from fully executing their maneuver. So the ship, hopefully, the first one to bump into you wasn't your target. You want the ones moving later, and hopefully they'll bump into their own ship, still losing their action, and you'll get a range one shot there.
Yeah, and I think there's the defensive angle and the offensive angle here to consider. The offensive angle being, how do I control the overlapping and bumping in such a way that my opponent has as few shots on the ship they want to shoot, and I have as many shots as possible on the ship I want to shoot? Typically, the ship you want to shoot at this point is whatever one received the most damage in your initial volley or two. The defensive angle here is also very important. I look at the ships I have. Okay, which one is my opponent focusing fire on? How much damage has it taken? And can I put it in a position where ideally it can still shoot and receives almost no shots back? Or if necessary, it doesn't get to shoot but is not being shot at by any of my opponent's ships.
I mean, because you want to get into your opponent's mind a bit there. If they put some damage cards on your ace ship, their priority is going to be to try and finish that off as quickly as possible. So they're not going to want to take any turns shooting at your other ships. And that can really guide you into how they're going to be maneuvering. They're going to want to follow and chase your damage ship. So then you can plan accordingly, either set up a block with your damage ship so that they don't have as many guns shooting back on it, or use your other ships to deny the space for them to chase you.
The overall goal being you want to minimize risk to your damaged ships. At the same time, the other main consideration on offense is looking at which ship you want to focus fire on and trying to figure out what their escape routes are. What kind of maneuvers are they going to perform to minimize risk of that ship dying? Oftentimes, this will include you putting your ships in such a way that maybe one of them won't get a shot, but you'll perform a key block that gives you good shots with your other ships.
Right, and sometimes you're stuck making a lot of non-optimal decisions. Perhaps you have a large base ship that doesn't have room to fully turn around, and you need to make sure you're keeping arc. But if you do things like take a one turn instead of a two turn, where you're not going to fully execute the maneuver, but when you set the tracks down and move your big base along it, you're going to get more twist in your arc. These are the kind of maneuvers that kind of help you win the scrum, how to set up so that you get as many arcs on the ships you're trying to track.
So overall, start to finish, when we're considering our maneuvers and how we want to maneuver our ships, we look at our rock placement and opening setup, trying to block my opponent's lanes with rocks or create lanes for myself. You want to consider putting your ship at non-90 degree angles, so maybe tilt that ship 5 to 15 degrees in order to gain that late game advantage, depending on where you want the first engagement to be.
Yeah, you want to make sure you're controlling your speed with all of your ships, and this will help you get them all into the engagement at the right time.
You want to set your goals. There's a whole sequence of them, the main goal being to win the game, but a lot of smaller goals that you'll accomplish along the way, as well as knowing how my maneuvers can affect me achieving those goals.
And then more specifically with each dial placement, you want to be considering what options is this giving me on my future turns.
And finally, of course, when you get into the scrum, when everyone's bumping into everybody, how can I perform maneuvers that minimize risk to my damaged ships and maximize my ability to take my opponent's damaged ships off the board?
So hopefully this has given you some insight on how you can improve your maneuvering game, some things to reflect back on after, you know, a tough loss. Yeah, it can feel like the dice robbed you, but try to analyze some of these things for things you can improve on. Because we can't really change how the dice rolls, but we can pick stronger maneuvers.
We've got another store champion from the Radio TCX community that we wanted to give a shout out to.
Yeah, congratulations, Ben Crane from Los Angeles, won a store champion flying Han Solo with Expertise, C-3PO, and Gunner, and then a Warden Squadron K-Wing with Extra Munitions, Sabine Wren, Cluster Mines, Thermal Detonators, and Advanced Slam.
So a huge congratulations to Ben, and if any of you other Radio TCX listeners win a store championship, be sure to share that with us along with your list, either on our Facebook page or message us through Patreon. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/radiotcx and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why others might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a shout out to Tortugatron, who left us a review saying that they enjoyed the news and list theory crafting portions of our podcast a lot.
Thank you, Tortugatron, and everyone else who's already left a review for us on iTunes. We really appreciate it.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good luck on your store champs.